IR Simplified Podcast, episode 71. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me here in this another episode of the IR Simplified Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about an article that appeared on today's BrisbaneTimes.com.au newspaper, website, thingy, whatever it is, talking about financial stress among employees being your problems, being and you being the business owner. We'll also do a little bit of a follow-up or an addendum to an article that I wrote a couple of days ago about an unconventional guide to industrial relations, and I will be talking a little bit more about this whole political mess regarding penalty rates. So, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Okay, and kicking this episode off today is a bit of a discussion about an article titled "Your Employees' Money Worries Are Also Your Own." Now, as I said, that appeared in the Brisbane Times online newspaper or online news site. It goes on to talking about that when your employees have start having financial problems and being placed under a fair amount of financial stress, that it does impact their job. Now, what was interesting about that is that, and reading from the article here, talking about that, they were saying that their finding is based on the analysis of almost 1,300 truck drivers who were selected because of the consequence of poor performance is the most perilous. So, obviously, that means, you know, if they don't perform well in their job, you know, it has potential to kill people, you know, accidents and all that sort of stuff as well. So, and it says, as expected, the frequency of crashes increased significantly in concert with the rise of in financial difficulties. Now, why this is important, it says, because the article was said when the employees were asked to indicate which aspect of their life was most affected by their financial stress, their job emerged as the biggest casualty, substantially more than their relationships with their partners, friends, family, and certainly more than their health and living conditions. Now, I obviously think that this is important, especially as we're coming up to the 1st of July and the next round of penalty rate reductions will be coming across. And then there's also the other modern awards that are going to be having their penalty rates reviewed. I think it's Hair and Beauty and honestly forgotten what the other one was. But, you know, it's the thing is that, I'm not saying that businesses should pay their employees more, and that's the thing. The article doesn't actually say that, but what the article does say is that it may be worthwhile running financial planning seminars, company-sponsored programs beyond superannuation, and even some sort of mortgage assistance. So, and it's the thing, is that, you know, we need to start looking at the relationship part of industrial relations, and that is getting back to that whole relationship. You know, this whole penalty rates discussion, obviously, I'm not a supporter of it because I believe that employees should be paid for the value that they bring into the company and the organization and not for, you know, how much you think you can get them the cheapest for. And that's the thing, is that if your employees aren't bringing, a large amount of value or any substantial value into the organization, I think that, something needs to be looked at. Had your hiring practices and things like that too. So going back to this article is that, yes, I mean, you know, we've got budgetary concerns. Everyone's budget's getting stretched and coming tighter. And, yes, you know, I do understand businesses have budgets and things to meet as well and all that. So, but this is the thing. It's a relationship, as I said before. It takes two to tango. Start looking after them. Maybe spend a bit of time doing that, give them financial planning sessions and advice, give them ways to learn how to manage the money themselves. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, that the company needs to go and hold everyone's hand, but this is about the thing. This is, you know, going back and giving them the power of, you know, being able to manage things themselves rather than just swimming in debt, which is going to cause them problems. They're going to be distracted at work. And, you know, and then that's productivity is going to suffer and all that sort of stuff as well. So now all that leads into the next thing that I'm talking about, which was my unconventional guide to industrial relations. Now, a few days ago, I did publish an article titled The Unconventional Guide to Industrial Relations. And one of the things that I did speak about in that was to start with open book management and gave a definition of open book management. And if you haven't read the article, an open book management is defined as empowering every employee of an organization with required knowledge about the processes, adequate training and powers to make decisions which would help them in running the business. And it's all about teamwork and moving forward collectively. Now, this ties in with what I was talking about earlier on about, financial planning and financial management, because this is the thing, is that if you get, you get the employees more involved in the business, go through open book management and, as I've said in the past, see what you can tell them. Looking a bit more into that open book stuff, some of the things that I've seen is that they are completely transparent with the employees. And, if you can do that, go for it. You should be able to trust your employees enough to know about your business and not run and tell the competitors and all that sort of stuff. So, you've got them bound by their confidentiality agreements and NDAs and all that sort of stuff that you get them to sign off on when they start. So, why can't you run to the open book management? Run with that. Get them more involved with the process. Don't treat them like the proverbial mushroom, which is, obviously kept in the dark and fed the fertilizer that you feed mushrooms. So, this is the thing. Now, going on with that is that one thing that I do want to add to that, as well as, open book management and being proactive rather than reactive, is actually listen to your employees. Now, if you have a look at most of the gripes, I'd be willing to say that, probably 99% of the gripes and things that go through the Fair Work Commission is where the employer hasn't listened to the employee. Now, this starts with industrial disputes, unfair dismissals, and anything that you can find, even to the point of unions that have disagreed with enterprise agreements. And it's because the employees haven't been listened to. Yes, and now, I am aware that just because you listen to them doesn't mean to say that you have to agree with what they say or do what they say, and that may get them upset later on. But it's getting to the point of where you're listening to them, using unfair dismissal as an example. And I've said this in the past as well, is that 9 times out of 10, the employee files an unfair dismissal application because they feel aggrieved by the situation or they feel that they've been done wrong by the whole termination process. There was one that I saw where recently, it was a couple of days ago, where the employee gave his notice. He was supposed to, let's say for argument's sake, Friday the 29th of June. So, gave his notice for that. And then it comes to Tuesday and the employer turns around and says, "Oh, no, we don't need you Wednesday. Don't worry about coming back." So that was, and this is the baffling bit, is that it was a termination at the initiative of the employer. So that was the thing. They put in an unfair dismissal application for 2 days. There was no compensation awarded or anything like that. But it just shows you the point is that, and for that not to be settled at conciliation and for that to go all the way through to having a decision made, it's one of those things that just baffles me, is that, why are businesses doing this? Why are, managers doing this? Why are we continually having this us and them conflict with industrial relations? Why don't we just turn around and say, yes, it's a relationship, let's deal with it how it is and respond to things as they arise? So now, noticing that I've gone off on a bit of a tangent here, it comes back to the thing is that listen to the employees, just listen to what they say, be aware of it, give them a genuine answer and genuine response onto how you're going to find out any more information that they need, how you're going to rectify whatever problem that they've got or challenge that has propped up. Don't just do the whole, the mirror answer, "Oh yeah, I'll look into it," or "I'll look into it," and all that sort of stuff. And find people who will take responsibility. I know, when I worked in government, it was one of the things is that working in Hollywood and, obviously being the newbie and so, what do you mean? And so, well, everyone's acting in a position and no one wants to take responsibility for it because they're only acting that position. And then you do find people that, that is their substantive role or the position that they are in, and they give you the mirror response. you know, and what's the mayor's response? Oh, yeah, we'll look into it. We'll look into it. No, that's a good idea. Let me get back to you with that. And obviously, that's a problem with this particular part of the government, or actually, I think it seems to be something with government and the different parts that I've worked in. It seems to be something wrong with government across the board, because that's the answer that you get most of the time. And in private enterprise, we don't need to do that. If the employees come to you with something, yes, look into it. And being proactive is that the employees shouldn't come to you with something. You should actually be going to them. And it comes back to the thing that I was looking, another article that I read on LinkedIn. It was about the Marine officers eat last, because it's the commission officers always eat after their troops do, because they're there in a position of service for their NCOs. And because the NCOs are pretty much, they're the ones that do all the heavy lifting. The commission officers are obviously sitting in the back and, sitting on all this sort of stuff. So this is the thing. This is what we need more. We need managers to have that bit of service, is that you're there to help your employees. You're there to be of service to them. You're there to, to help them do their job as effectively and efficiently as they can. And the better that they do it, then the better you as a manager or a supervisor looks as well. So, this is the thing. They're not your minions. They're not your little, chess pieces to push around the board, or checker pieces and all that sort of stuff. They're there. You're there to serve them. So, it's one of those things. That was a facepalm moment, as you could probably tell. It's something that we need to seriously start looking at. What has happened in the past isn't going to get us to where we need to be today, tomorrow, and in the future. So we need to start doing things differently, looking at things differently. And it's something that I've harped on about a lot, and I will probably keep talking about it too, is that we need to stop this obsession with degrees in industrial relations. And for people, maybe further up as you get up the food chain into director level and dealing with boards and all that sort of good stuff, maybe then. But you'd be dealing with employees and, people on the coalface, you don't need a degree to talk to them. All you need to be able to do is have two ears and one mouth. And remember, we were given two ears, so we listen more than we talk. You need to be able to listen to what they say and, give them the answer that they're looking for. Or if you can't give it to them, give them a general response. Hey, you know what? I don't know the answer to that one. Let me find out for you and get back to you. You'll find 9 times out of 10, most of them are happy for that. And then when your employees are happy with the genuine answer that you've given them, then they're less likely to go and talk to a third party about something that's going on there. So anyway, going to finish that rant there before I jump back up on my soapbox again, though I will be on the soapbox for my next one, which is talking about penalty rates. Now, as I said at the start, I'm not a fan of penalty rates being reduced. I don't think that they are a way for, as some of the members of the IR club continually say, it's a way for, people to get money for nothing and all that sort of stuff. Well, no, obviously it's a penalty for the business doing something on a particular day. Obviously working weekends. Now, I disagree with the commission's argument that Sunday is no more antisocial or inconvenient than what Saturday is, so the rates are going to be in line with that. Well, no, there's still a number of things that you can't do on Sundays that you can do on Saturdays. But it's a thing. We'll have to wait and see what happens with the next one. Now, I will have probably a fair bit to say about the hair and beauty one, not for any particular reason, but I just think as I've said right from the start, that's an industry that shouldn't be having one, because the industry needs to clean itself up first before they can start talking about, the profitability and the impact that wages have on business bottom lines and things like that. So getting back to that now, we've got the Super Sunday or Super Saturday elections, whatever day it was in July, with all those who were caught up in the dual citizen fiasco. And one of the things that we're seeing now is the Labor Party coming out and saying that they're going to do their bit to protect penalty rates, and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. Well, that's the thing. We need to remember that the Fair Work Act came in under Bill Shorten's watch. He was Workplace Relations Minister when that came in. He was boasting about it and was part of it. So, it's the thing. Bill Shorten's got as much to answer for the problems to begin with than anyone else. The 4-yearly reviews were something that, you know, were written in when he, you know, put the legislation forward and it passed under his watch. So, you know, it is very hypocritical for him to turn around and say, oh, no, we disagree with the independent umpire. But then, anyway, yeah, so penalty rates, don't agree with their decisions to being removed. I also think that people need to start looking seriously about who they vote for. You know, we're seeing that, you know, voting for the big majors isn't really doing anything different. You're either, you know, answering to one side or the other. There's no genuine political leadership or anything like that. You know, maybe we need to boot them all out and start from fresh again. So anyway, I think that's about it for the rant from me. It's a nice short one this week. All the other things that I want to talk about, I'll talk about in the show notes. If there's an email subscription form, now I've been having a few challenges with my email provider, my email service, which is Drip, changed it, a few management things on that one, and I've broken the system. So as soon as that form comes back up online, there'll be a form to subscribe to that. There's also there will be a link on the show notes, which for this one will be irsimplified.com.au/episode71. That is the number 7 followed by the number 1. There'll be links to that, to Facebook groups and all that sort of good stuff, so make sure you head on over to that. Anyway, this was the IR Simplified podcast. My name is Cameron Blewett, and thank you for listening. And until next week, bye for now.